Hi, I'm contractor Kevin Kennedy, host of Your Valuable Home.
And I'm Ron Melk, Kevin's alter ego and co-host. We are not your average home show.
We educate homeowners on how to get the best value for their home improvement dollar, how to compare estimates and contractors, plan projects, select the right person for your project, get the job done right at the right price and on time.
Listen and learn at 2 p.m. every Saturday on WWDB 860. Your Valuable Home is brought to you by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets and Warung's Lumber and Home Center. Tom Adams, with location throughout the tri-state area. Visit their showrooms or call for a free in-home estimate at TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com. Save on windows, doors, sidings, and flooring. And then there's Warung's on Route 611 just north of Doylestown. They are the source for great values in kitchens and baths, lumber, millwork, hardscaping, and more.
Tom Adams and Warung's, two longtime family-owned, customer-friendly businesses. Check them out at TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Warung's. That's WEHRUNGS.com. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. Check out TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Warung's Lumber and Home Center. That's WEHRUNGS.com.
Are your windows letting air in? Get new windows before winter comes. Tom Adams Windows and Carpets was awarded Best Installation in the Nation by Window and Door Magazine. We're celebrating this with 50% off our award-winning installation on selected energy-saving windows. Call us or visit us online at TomAdamsWindows.com for no deposit, no money down financing. We also provide free in-home estimates. Again, TomAdamsWindows.com. Hurry, sale ends October 14.
We're back, and you're listening to Your Valuable Home with me, contractor Kevin Kennedy. All right, Ron, now it is time for the replay. What do we got going on?
Well, we're going to be talking about a special place, a place that I love. I just came back from it. There's a sun-drenched place people on the East Coast very, very seldom think of getting away to in the cold weather months. What do you think it is?
Anywhere warm. I'm thinking warm. West Coast.
What, you think of West Coast? Think Arizona. Think Arizona. Arizona is a very cool place. It's only about 2 hours further than Florida, and it's Arizona. We have a Bucks County transplant to Scottsdale, giving us a feeling for what it's like to live in what is often called the Grand Canyon State. It's got a couple nicknames, I found out, but it's often called the Grand Canyon State, so that's why most people would know it. Gina, welcome back to Your Valuable Home.
Thank you, Ron and Kevin.
Yeah,
I
nice
look
to
forward
talk to you
talking
again.
To you about Arizona.
All right. First time you were on, we talked about your experience serving as a GC for the construction of your home. This time, let's focus on Arizona. So Kevin's got a question for you.
Yeah, I mean, most important about the house is, hey, how's the weather in Arizona right now?
So let me start here. We're on 126 day of over 100 degrees with no humidity.
Oh, that's perfect.
Which really basically translates to East Coast 85.
85, yeah, that's wonderful. I played last Friday. I was on a tennis court in Scottsdale, and their tennis courts are all public courts. They cost $3 to play. I played with Gina and her husband. I think it was 98 or 99 right then, something like
yeah.
that.
Who won?
We call this resort temperature.
Resort temperature.
That's what kind of makes you happy every day, and that's why people come to visit.
It was very, very comfortable.
So, Gina, did you beat Ron?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did not play well. I've been playing pickleball, and my tennis game is like in the dumper.
I'm not going to say you didn't do that bad. You did pretty good.
I didn't do my normal self. I didn't do myself justice that day.
He tells me he's got 138 mile an hour serve. It's unbelievable.
Yes,
I wish I did.
He's the Osaka of tennis.
Osaka. The male Osaka.
Yeah.
All right. So here we go. So Arizona has lots of attractions, and we saw a lot of them when we were out there this time. Can you get into some of the major ones? I mean, for a vacationer, who would spend like a winter there, some time in the winter there.
Right. I'm actually going to tell you that a lot of the visitors, and we're going to forget about this. We're going to call them snowbirds if you want. They come for 6 months, or some people come during those months, you know, January through May. Those are big months to come and visit. So I'm going to start with saying spring training baseball.
There you go.
Which happens at the end of March through the beginning of May. And I'm going to go through a list really quick. KC Royals, Diamondbacks, Chicago Cubs, White Sox, Cincinnati Reds, Cleveland Indians, Colorado Rockies, KC Royals, FC Giants, Texas Rangers, LA Dodgers, Angels, Padres, Mariners. There are about a million people that come here just for spring training. And what they do is they hit them up a hotel or resort, and then they start going to these different fields. The other thing is a hidden treasure here, and no one really knows about it. Some people do. There's something called the Barrett Jackson Car Show, an auction. It happens in January.
Didn't know
it's
about
a major
it, yeah.
car show.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous. $4 million, $5 million cars go up for auction. You can just go and visit and learn lots of things you didn't know. The Arabian Horse Show in February.
Hmm.
If you don't know anything about horses, you'll love it. You know, they're beautiful. You get to visit with them, and you learn about how beautiful this animal is. And I will tell you, there's Scottsdale art shows that hit January, February, and March. One stays, artists visit. They make their house in this tent, and you can watch them paint from beginning to end. And
plus
other art shows on the weekend. It really is. And I'm going to tell you about the Musical Instrument Museum. There are only two in the world. And the, a gentleman who used to be the CEO of Target, who actually lives here, actually put that project into motion. And that is something that is memorable. You can't even get through the whole museum. And let's not forget about the hiking, the biking, and all the resorts, the spas, and the restaurants.
Yeah, we did this time Sedona. I love Sedona. Sedona is like a magical place. Sedona, we spent some time with you in Scottsdale. I love Scottsdale. And then tried a little change of pace and went to Tucson and went to the biosphere, which is really fascinating. And the Sonoran Desert Museum down there, where you walk through the desert and all the critters are out there. You know, you can, it's up close and personal.
How'd you work out with that? Because I know you're not a big fan of snakes. And
No, the snakes, thank God they had them behind like glass. So you take a peek at them and you go on. Look at something else after that, but no, that's a good. Most of the stuff you're talking about, I never knew about, Gina.
It's another time you have to come and visit Kevin and Ron.
I'm going to be out there the next time with you. Ron, you stay home. I'm going to go out there.
I have extra room. Come. You know, it's after you live here, you realize that why people call this a destination and why there are so many resorts here. Because you've got outdoor temperatures that are perfect, and you can make plans if you're a tourist. It's rarely going to rain on your plans, on your parade, and you're going to have a great time sitting around your pool and doing all these activities. And I'm not even talking about the tourist traps. I'm talking about true destinations that you just want to head to and have, you know, a good learning experience also.
Well, when I come out, I'm going to be, see, it's just going to be me because my wife cannot take off during the year. She's a teacher, so I'm going to be enjoying the time. But I want to come out in January and February because something we didn't talk about was golf. I know that's very big in Australia. Yeah.
Guess who plays tennis? Okay, golf. I have to tell you, I forgot about the tournament. Waste Management Tournament is here.
TPC.
They have 800,000 people show up at this tournament.
Where is that? In Scottsdale?
So it actually is in Scottsdale. It's at a tournament club, and it's a PGA golf course right off the Fairmont Princess. It's pristine. They have three courses there. You can actually go play. You can't play the tournament course, but there are other two courses that you can go and play there, and people come in the hordes to do this. I have to tell you, it is a happening to be here.
How about
yeah,
that?
Because usually with Ryan, I know we talk about when you're golfing, it's very quiet. You got to watch the players and you got to be very quiet. There's one hole, the par three, where they will cheer the guys when they hit the green or get close or if they get birdie. It's a party. It's a frat party. That's
yes.
the one you're talking about. It's a great time.
Well, it's called the 16th hole.
Mm.
And my son comes in every year to sit there and get there at 4 o'clock in the morning. So he gets a front seat. This is how good it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was at tournament, one of the Opens, but I that one I heard, it's a big party place.
It's a party place. It's, you know, years ago it wasn't, but because of all the visitors that come here, they wanted to have events all during this tournament, the Waste Management Tournament, so that it would bring different people in to come and see it for different reasons.
And it does, and especially with the revival of Tiger Woods now. It's been a great, golf's been revitalized over the past couple months with Tiger being back into it.
Well, you know
well,
what?
He actually was... He was here last year. He exited early, don't get me wrong, but he did bring some, you know, some awe to it. Like, oh my God, he's back. Because he was going to Dubai to do that tournament, and I guess he decided to do Dubai and Scottsdale back.
No, he just won, didn't he? Major tournament?
A couple weeks ago, yeah.
So maybe he's coming back. Who knows?
Yep. Right?
You know what? I just want to make this point about Arizona. It seems like an overpowering state. It's a big state. It's the sixth largest state, I think, in terms of land mass. But the roads, a lot of the roads are no potholes. No potholes. Didn't see any.
Well, one due to weather, but two, we have the Navajos, the Hopis, and the Pima reservations here. So they actually maintain most of the land here. I will tell you that. And and then we have neighboring states, of course, that that we get to visit. But
and it's easy to get to neighboring states too, right? Right, New Mexico. Nevada?
Let's say New Mexico, Santa Fe. We'll skip Albuquerque, but New Mexico is, Santa Fe is 6 hours away. If you want to go to Las Vegas and see a show, like I'm going to go see Lady Gaga, four and a half hours, and we're talking drive time, just to get to Las Vegas. You can pick up an airplane and get there in 30 minutes if you want for $49. L.A., 5 hours. San Diego, 5 hours. The beach, 5 hours. Palm Springs, California, great destination, by the way, 3 hours.
Hmm.
So you can just jump in the car and, you know, go for an overnighter and get there easily. Straight roads, no weather conditions, and basically, I've never really had a lot of traffic other than in the California area, I hate to bring that up, driving anywhere. But we get to national parks right away. You know, we all know about the Grand Canyon. It's only 5 hours away. There's Antelope Canyon, which is in northern Arizona. Magnificent canyon. If you haven't done it, do it. It's the photography is incredible there, even if you don't know even how to take a picture. Zion, because we're near the Utah border.
Zion National Park.
That's a nice one there.
Yeah.
Saw that in the air when we were flying home that day.
Yeah.
Right. We have Monument National Park and the famous Four Corners. I'm bringing it up. Mesa Verde. We are part of the Four Corners and proud of it. So it's something to visit. Again, that's only 5 hours away. You know,
Very cool stuff.
From living here, we actually get in the car and drive places. You know, you don't even want to fly because the drive is too easy and the views are incredible with the different landscapes. So we'll just get in the car. We'll drive to Santa Fe. You know, we're driving to Vegas, you know, in January just because it's four and a half hours away. It gives us a reason to leave, which is perfect. But I would say it's a big landmass out here.
Has it been building? The industry been booming out there? Homes being built?
Seemed that way to me. Yeah.
So right now things are booming. People and I actually wanted to talk about this. We're building a lot of apartment buildings because the landscape of Arizona is changing again. What's happening is Arizona is planning on a big growth by young people coming here because the cost of living is less and taxes are less. So companies are moving here, and one in particular, State Farm, moved their entire headquarters here because it can lure younger people here. They can have a great life versus going to a major city like Chicago, New York, or L.A.
Well, yeah.
Let's
talk about that a second, because we'll talk a little bit about what it's like to vacation in Arizona, and it's something I'd love to do again. I love it out there, versus like for people on the East Coast going to Florida, or even the islands for that matter. But what's it like living out there day to day?
So living out here, especially the change in Bucks County, it's an outdoor life. All your plans are made to just stay outside. You utilize your patio at every opportunity. You have gorgeous sunsets, magnificent orange, pinks, reds, golds. It's sometimes you pull the car over just because you have to see it. Since the weather isn't an issue, you plan on making arrangements to stay outside, whether it's hiking, tennis, golf, and you don't cancel them. You actually don't. You actually, you know, go along. It's an extremely active lifestyle here with bike clubs, hiking clubs. You can make friends easily here. There's a lot of networking because it's a melting pot. Everyone basically is from someplace else. There are natives here, but it's nice because you're not alone. You don't feel alone when you move here.
Hmm. We got about 45 seconds left. Gina, talk to us about, which is something that's stunning to me, the critters out there. How do you deal with the critters?
I have to tell you, it's an everyday battle. I stay away from them. You can't make eye contact with the bobcats, the mountain lions, or the coyotes. And if you see them, don't make eye contact and just walk the other way. You have to make sure that you don't contact a javelina, because if they feel as if that they're endangering their family, they get very protective. What you have to do is you have to back off, because they will charge you. They have tusks. I might as well tell you that. And they're not part of the pig family. They are a mammal.
Yeah, I haven't seen one. I'm always looking forward to seeing one. You know, we got to go. We got to go. But this gives us a little bit of a flavor of what it's like to vacation and live in Arizona. And
I hope I lured you to come and visit again.
I'm coming back.
I'm there.
Kevin's there.
But, let me know. I have bedrooms, and I would love to show you Arizona. And you know, Ron, I'm glad we did this show, because now I've lured you and Rosemary back too.
Okay. All right. Now we will definitely be back.
All right,
Gina. Thanks you for coming on. We appreciate it.
So wonderful to speak to you. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. Check out TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Werung's Lumber and Home Center. That's WERUNGS.com.
Are your windows letting air in? Get new windows before winter comes. Tom Adams Windows and Carpets was awarded Best Installation in the Nation by Window and Door Magazine. We're celebrating this with 50% off our award-winning installation on selected energy-saving windows. Call us or visit us online at TomAdamsWindows.com for no deposit, no money down financing. We also provide free in-home estimates. Again, TomAdamsWindows.com. Hurry, sale ends October 14.
Decking, railing, lighting, furniture, fencing, framing. At Trex, we make the most in outdoor living, because you deserve to get more from your life outdoors. So why not start bringing your ideas to life now with the brand that's engineering what's next?
Visit Waring's Lumber and Home Center in Ottsville, just above Doylestown, to view all Trex decking and railing options. Call 610-847-2066.
We're back, and you're listening to Your Valuable Home with me, Contractor Kevin Kennedy. All right, Ron, now it is time for a horror story, and it's another window story problem. But this one I actually physically went and seen, because we actually had to fix the job. So it was actually for a previous customer of mine. And so I said to my foreman, I said, hey, listen, Dave, we have a window that needs to be corrected. I said, he's having a lot of problems with it. This is the job where we didn't install the windows, and we have to fix it. So we got out there, and we noticed the right side of the bay window was dropped about a good half inch, and he said air was coming in. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, that's when usually what happens is the weight of the outer part of the bay window, that's where the weight is. It starts to sag.
Yeah, because everything's hanging on it.
Yeah, it's hanging on it.
Yeah.
So he used the existing supports to mount the window. So if we did the siding and he never replaced the supports, I said to him, probably then that left support was not stabilized from the beginning, because we didn't want to do anything with the windows because we weren't doing the window. So we just went around. He said, just side up to the existing. I said, it's not a problem. I said, if you ever do fix it, the vinyl comes off easy. Vinyl comes off really easy. I said, we can also fix it.
Okay.
So Dave looked at it, started to pull it apart. Well, I went and I had to go get some supplies, because I usually build the big box bottom for super support. You could park a truck when I'm done. It's heavy. So we started ripping it out. And what happened was, when he installed it, he used on the right side 3/4 inch plywood. And that was the gap he needed to fill up so the window can lay flush.
Right.
Apparently he must have ran out of it. And he used 3/4 inch foam board on the left side. Put the window on
not
top.
Not
good at all. Hey, a little bit better of insulation. So maybe the right half was insulated a little bit more than the left half. But in my mind, I'm thinking this is what he had to do. He ran out of plywood. So since he ran out of plywood, he used foam board to install it. So this has only been 2 years that went by. Well, apparently that heaviness of the window weighed it down on the foam board on the right side where the foam was. So it crushed the foam board. So what happened was the window became out of square, and he had this big gap in his window. And he said, last winter was so cold that we had to do something. He was putting towels in it. And I said, well, that's due to the fact that something happened, something shifted
in the bay window.
Yeah, that's what I do too. When it gets, I put towels in there.
Yeah, well now you don't need to with your windows.
Right, yeah,
but
no,
so
no, not now.
The whole problem was is that apparently when you're doing something, if you do run out, and this is for any contractor, you just go get another piece of board or some kind of lumber that's going to be able to stabilize that window, because if the original contractor did this from the beginning, it would. Talking about what, hey, look, I ran out of wood. Charge the homeowner the $30, say $50 to go get it, because it wasn't too far, the supply house down the road. I had to come in and charge him $2,000 to rip out that whole bottom, the siding down, re-jack the window up, re-support it, and build my, brace underneath.
Wow.
That's $2,000 this homeowner had to spend, and he shouldn't have never had to.
Never had to, yeah.
And you're spending that much for a high-end window, why not put it right in the first time? If you run short of material, and I've seen it a bunch of times, it's just upsetting that this homeowner had to spend $2,000 to fix it up again.
Unbelievable.
So that's what I look at, is that today it's not about, you know, quality. It's about let's rush. We don't care. I've got to do three jobs at once. I'm getting a sub pay, so I've got to get it done. But it doesn't work that way. I feel it shouldn't work that way. So why is it happening?
No, if you just looked at the, say, take an area like southeastern Pennsylvania or northern Delaware or New Jersey, just that circle right there. If you looked at all the jobs that had to be done over all the time because of incompetence, probably incompetence, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to have my new
company. It's got to be a boxcar figure.
Oh, absolutely.
It's got to be an enormous figure. And people were just throwing this money out every year.
And it's not that money wasn't so much the object. I knew everything we've done was very much on the high end side. So I don't know why he had went that direction. But he had called me back to fix it because I guess he was unhappy with it. So we were just there about a month ago. And basically what had happened was it foamed down, crushed down, and we had to redo it. And it cost him a lot more money from the beginning.
Absolutely.
So why not go that route? I mean, sometimes it's, you know, we do talk and he's saying, you're always busy. I said, yeah, I get it, but there's a reason why I'm always busy. You never have this problem. So $2,000 to me is a lot of money that you got to spend for something you shouldn't have had to.
Absolutely.
And
I'm sure he felt the same way.
Right. And I said, this is what I have to do. There's not much I can do. I said, listen, Band-Aids, not much you can Band-Aid. If it's done improper from the beginning, you've got to go all the way back, strip everything out, and redo it properly. I cannot Band-Aid or fix something or caulk something when I know it's going to leak again. So that's one thing where people think, oh, you know, can you just fix it up for a little cheaper? I'm like, well, no, you can't. Because if I go trying to Band-Aid it and it has a problem again, he's going to call me up saying, what you Band-Aid didn't work. So now I know this is going to work. And I said to him, listen, if you want to sit on this bay window from here on out, you're more than welcome to. You can put three people on there. You're not going to move this window, and that's my warranty by doing it this way correctly. Because you can see I actually stabilized the underneath, and I put four supports instead of two supports. And then I boxed it. Then I took a whole bunch of insulation and stuck it up under there. So he went from that half of the window, which was foam board, to now having R19 under the window. So I supported it with R19 in that box frame. So it's going to be a lot warmer. It's going to be a much better job, but he's not going to have a problem from here on out.
I would think if it wasn't insulated there, you're going to get a lot of cold air.
Yeah, it's right? A lot of cold.
A lot of cold air.
Usually when you see a bay window and then it sticks out that far and there's nothing under it, it's a sign that it's going to be cold because it needs something.
It's getting cold from the top, from the sides, and from the bottom.
Yeah, from the bottom. And windows, even though every window company, depending on high end, low end, a window is not as well insulated as the 2x6 wall that's in his house already. So by having that, no insulation on the bottom is really going to make a difference because all it is a piece of plywood. He had a piece of plywood from his stuff and half of it was foam. Then you had the window, which is a half inch piece of finished plywood. And that's it, some paint on top. So the window had to be cold. So I told him, I said, listen, this winter, you're going to notice a much bigger difference. But the point is, if you don't do the job correctly as a contractor, the homeowners can suffer because when they have to get another contractor because you're out of business to redo it, it's going to cost the homeowner money. So why not do it right the first time and you're not going to be on my show for these problems?
There you go.
Got a home improvement horror story? Most homeowners do. If you want to share it with our listeners and spare somebody else the same headache, contact me, Contractor Kevin Kennedy, at kevin@yourvaluablehome.net or call me at 215-364-3286. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. Check out TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Werungs Lumber and Home Center. That's WERUNGS.com.
Are your windows letting air in? Get new windows before winter comes. Tom Adams Windows and Carpets was awarded Best Installation in the Nation by Window and Door Magazine. We're celebrating this with 50% off our award-winning installation on selected energy-saving windows. Call us or visit us online at TomAdamsWindows.com for no deposit, no money down financing. We also provide free in-home estimates. Again, TomAdamsWindows.com. Hurry, sale ends October 14.
Trex composite decking is rot and splinter resistant. Wood is not. Trex is insect proof. Wood is not. Trex eliminates time-consuming maintenance. Wood does not. Trex comes with a 25-year fade and stain warranty. Wood does not. So here's the question. Why would you ever choose to build with wood? Make sure your next deck is built with Trex.
To learn more about Trex, visit Waring's Lumber and Home Center in Ottsville, just above Doylestown.
We're back, and you're listening to Your Valuable Home with me, Contractor Kevin Kennedy.
All right, Ron, now it is time for the college, and I don't know where you come up with these colleges. I have no clue. Talk to me about it before, something different.
Very interesting story. First of all, we have with us, and thank you very much, Ty Olson. Ty Olson, he's the Director of Operations at American Lime Technology. They're in Chicago. They're in Chicago, and they do something that nobody in this area, I don't think, has ever heard of, okay? And what that is they produce a building material that's called hempcrete, H-E-M-P-C-R-E-T-E, hempcrete, right? And Ty, what is hempcrete, and how did your company get involved? I think it's a fascinating product.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Ron. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, hempcrete is a very cool building product that has been around in one form or another for a couple thousand years, actually. Some very early uses of it were old original quicklime or lime mixes with essentially a hemp straw that was used similar to a cob or adobe type of construction. It had a resurgence in France in the 1970s, where it was brought into more of a modern building style. And then in its current form, that was really started in the late 90s, early 2000s in the UK, as they were able to use some chemical testing to really establish the most efficient types of lime binders that would work well with the industrial hemp they were starting to grow. So American Lime Technology partnered with the original UK company, LimeTech UK, that was adapting the hempcrete system for residential and commercial use. And we started bringing it to the U.S. in about 2009 and then completed our first public residential project in 2010 in Asheville, North Carolina. And since then, we've gotten about two dozen of these homes in the ground. There are other companies that are working in one way or another with different hemp building materials, and there's about a total of 50 or so hempcrete homes or hemp building material homes that have been constructed in the U.S. so far, and we've been involved with about half of them.
About half of them. I would imagine so, because you're basically spearheading the whole thing in this country, right?
We are. We're doing everything we can in terms of building product information, material supply, really working to figure out how to get these things permitted and get them to a level where they can both be built wherever they need to be and also working to bring the price down on them. One of the initial barriers to entry of this is that the first systems we were building were being imported entirely from Europe. So basically shipping over specialty limes and bales of hemp across the Atlantic Ocean isn't the most economically feasible construction model.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But thanks to improvements in the lime industry, we've started blending the lime binders domestically, and then also thanks to movement in the legalization of industrial hemp, we've actually had access to domestic hemp suppliers for about the past 2 to 3 years. And there's been more push to get hemp fully legalized as an agricultural crop and remove it from the DEA schedule listing, which would really open up the markets for both industrial hemp growth and processing facilities, which is really sort of the bottleneck on the hemp side of this type of material.
Yeah, I would think that farmers are itching to grow this stuff, right?
They are. It's definitely a crop that can swap in for some of the other crops that are having some issues with them. It drops into a place in a tobacco farm pretty easily. And then there are other agricultural products, flax, canaf, other what I would call industrial fiber products that are being grown that you can easily do a crop rotation with hemp in. I would want to say that as soon as the legislation gets passed and it's really opened up, there is potentially going to be a bit of a oversupply of industrial hemp produced before the infrastructure for processing it gets in place.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem we did see happen in Canada. They legalized industrial hemp almost 2 decades ago, and the farmers started to grow as much as they could of it. Unfortunately, it takes a certain type of industrial processing plant in order to take the hemp straw, which is essentially the stock of the plant, and convert it into materials that are usable for its industrial applications, specifically the fiber and the hird, the fiber being essentially the bark of the plant and the hird being the woody core. So the fiber is used primarily for textiles, plastic manufacturing, rope manufacturing, things like that. The hird is used for construction materials, such as our hempcrete system, and it's also used for biofuels and for animal bedding. It has a pretty good source of that. But for close to 10 or more years, the Canadian farmers were unable to do anything with the straw because there was nowhere to actually process it. So it was essentially baled up, stored in warehouses, and just waiting for somebody to build a plant that could actually take advantage of this supply. And it got to the point where they just had to start leaving the crop to break down in the fields, or had to just burn the stalk of it. They were growing primarily for the seed or the grain of the plant, which is what is used for the CBD oils and the food products.
Mm-hmm.
But from the U.S. standpoint, since 2014, they passed the initial university-sponsored pilot programs for industrial hemp in the U.S. The first one, I believe, was out of Kentucky, and they have had the most progress on getting that program up and running. And Kentucky also has one of the only fully functional industrial hemp processing facilities in the country. And so they are essentially the first state and the first facility that we're able to get construction-grade hemp out of in the U.S. Prior to that, it was all coming in from England. A few small trial plants were set up in Canada that was able to produce some hemp. But for the most part, this Canadian plant that went online about 2 or 3 years ago is the first time we have been able to make a fully American product.
Hmm, how about that? What's your best guess? What's the legal climate like right now vis-a-vis hemp, industrial hemp?
Well, industrial hemp as a product to be used in construction or any other material industrial process is perfectly legal. It has never been illegal to use industrial hemp. It's just been illegal to grow it. So for decades, we were importing hemp from Europe and from China. Both of those areas have very large agricultural programs with it. The legal climate has definitely softened significantly. You have a lot of states that have very old agricultural traditions with industrial hemp. Kentucky, I mentioned, other ones like North Carolina, Virginia, Colorado, and also Oregon and Washington. They have really put together some of the most comprehensive pilot programs. And as a result of that, their senators and congressmen are strongly pushing to get industrial hemp legalized and removed from any sort of comparison to the DEA enforcement and drug aspects of it.
Yeah, I would think that any state, and this gets down to the politicians, any state that wants to be out in front of this thing can really, mm-hmm. really capture a good chunk of the market if you're first to do it.
Yeah,
from a political standpoint, there is very little opposition to this. The Senate proposed and submitted their farm bill for 2018 that included a item to fully legalize industrial hemp for industrial and agricultural purposes. That was submitted back in April, and they are expected to be voting on it potentially at the end of this month or possibly the month after. And if that gets approved by both houses of Congress, then it would fully legalize industrial hemp. That's not to say that farmers would immediately be able to go and start planting seeds the very next day. It will take probably 2 to 3 years to really implement the procedures for setting up the crops, growing them, and also to develop the supply chain for processing the hemp. As I mentioned before, that was one of the big hiccups in the Canadian system. but it's very exciting in terms of really opening up a lot of the country to being able to use these materials. Because as it is, we have a really awesome building system, but it definitely does have an upcharge, and a lot of that comes from transportation costs.
I'm sure,
So many of the materials are very regionally restricted to where you can actually source them from. It adds, we've seen it add between 15 and 20% to the cost of materials just purely in transportation costs. And being able to cut that out is going to definitely open up the material to larger markets, especially in the areas that have a lot of the agriculture of the hemp growing on. That'll really create a lot of interest in the residents of those areas to be building with these same products that are bringing a lot of economy back to their estates.
But correct me if I'm, go ahead.
I'm thinking about with our listeners to try to understand what the hempcrete they can actually use it for. Can you describe some of the elements that you would be using the hempcrete for your home?
Sure. So the primary use for hempcrete is as a building envelope system, primarily the walls. It can be used in floors and ceilings, but you don't quite get the same performance benefits from there. Hempcrete is a monolithic cast-in-place system, similar to how you would do cast-in-place concrete walls. It's not a structural material, but it is a highly insulating material, and it also has high permeability, which is sort of on the flip side of the way most construction is done in the U.S. In the U.S., most home construction is trying to make the envelope of your building as watertight and as airtight as possible in order to prevent any moisture from coming in.
Right.
The hempcrete system does the opposite sort of system, where you want to make your building airtight, but you want to make it as vapor permeable. So any water vapor in its gaseous form is able to flow through the wall system. And that sort of adds a passive humidity control. And it also adds an extra element of thermal performance that is thermal inertia, where the humidity that's contained within the walls at all time due to the nature of the structure of the hemp plant makes it so anytime there's a dynamic temperature change, daytime, nighttime shifts, or storm temperature changes, you get some rain, the temperature drops for a day or two, the wall will actually resist any short-term temperature changes by forcing the moisture in the wall to phase change from liquid to gas or from gas to liquid as the temperature gradient starts to push into the wall. And unless the temperature gradient is able to push more than halfway through the wall, just the phase change of that liquid to gas or gas to liquid will stop any actual penetration of the temperature through the wall system.
So it's an insulating.
It's a big insulator then.
Yeah.
It is. It's our value from the European testing that's been performed is the equivalent of about 2.4 per inch. But you get a lot more benefit than just the pure R value through that hydraulic thermal inertia.
So take a wild guess. I mean, an average house, like 2,200 square feet, if it had this as what, a cladding system?
It's the actual wall system.
The wall system.
Not a cladding system.
There
is a version of it that is a cladding system.
It is a cladding system. Okay. Because I looked at the house, the one in North Carolina. I think they used it as a cladding system in that case, didn't they?
No, that was a cast in situ.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. But it would seem to me that you could save a lot of money. What, you know, just off the top of your head, what could you save in terms of utility bills with this?
You really need a minimal amount of HVAC for these types of products. We don't have as much information from the U.S. market, but from the European market, specifically the British market. We have had industrial warehouses constructed from hempcrete for beer and wine warehouses to store the products before they go out for shipment that don't even have HVAC systems in them.
How about that?
The coldness of the beer and the wine as it's brought into the facility is able to maintain the temperature to the point that you basically have no thermal loss going through there. We had a house down in Florida that we constructed, and after that was finished, the homeowner told us that he was able to essentially heat his entire house in Florida just by the heat put off by his stove when he boiled his water for his tea in the morning. Granted, that's Florida. You don't need too much heat down there, but it really does bring down the amount of heating that you need. And really, anything that you need from daily temperature adjustments is, for the most part, eliminated by that dynamic temperature resistance. It takes usually around 3 or more days of a consistent 20-plus degree temperature swing before you really feel any effect of the temperature change from the outside.
Well, what if somebody wanted to do this with an existing house, as Ron, you just said, the cladding system? Mm-hmm. Would somebody be able to take this product and modify their existing home with this new hempcrete?
It is possible. It does have a few more design considerations and potential modifications that need to be made. Hempcrete, in order to cure correctly, really needs to have exposure to the air on both sides of the wall. So if you were doing a renovation where you were tearing down to the studs, you would potentially be able to go and cast hempcrete around your framing studs in order to swap out for that. There are other hemp products that would potentially be more in line with a renovation. There are hemp fiber insulation bats, which are essentially a drop-in substitute for your Owens Corning pink fiberglass insulation, maybe similar to a Roxel. And then there are other hemp lime plasters. There is a cladding system, but those are typically fairly thick. You have probably an 11 to 12 inch thick cladding system, which would probably be too thick to attach to an existing wall system. Renovation is possible. We have done it on a few projects, but it definitely is a little more difficult.
So you're better off building from scratch.
Yeah, building from scratch from that.
Building from scratch. We have folks who build expansions with hempcrete. That actually works very easily. Anything where you basically have easy access to your stick framing and you don't really have to remove as much existing portion of the house. And then also being able to make sure your framing is installed in a way that's going to be more compatible with the hempcrete is going to be helpful. You use the standard stick framing with hempcrete, 2x4s or 2x6s, depending on your building requirements. And then you install temporary formwork, typically a plywood or OSB board that you space off of the studs. Then you mix your hempcrete on the site, blending the lime and the hemp together in a mixer with water. And then you essentially bucket brigade and dump it into the formwork, give it a light tapping just to create some density in there. And then once you pull the formwork off, you've got your wall.
And it's durable, and it's not going to be is it waterproof?
It is very waterproof. You typically do need to have some sort of finish over the surface of it, lime plasters or stuccos if you want a direct plaster application. You can also do traditional siding applications, wood siding, metal siding. You could do a masonry veneer wall. You can do pretty much anything you want over the surface of it. You just have to modify the framing depending on what you're putting on. The material is very, very durable, but it does take a bit of time to cure up, similar to other masonry materials. It's typically going to need some protection for at least the first 28 days after it's cast. That's how long it takes it to really go through its initial cure and harden up. But after that, you really shouldn't have any durability issues at all in the material.
So what would you do if you were building a house with it? Would you wrap the house?
You would wrap the house. In most cases, we just leave the walls exposed and just make sure nobody drives a forklift into it, essentially. Any light contact with it won't really have any impact, but if you threw a 2x4 at it a day after it came out, you'd put a little bit of a dent into it. Just like any other finished masonry work, you need to protect it until it gets fully cured up. You don't want to building wrap it, though. That will actually trap the water that is in the fresh hempcrete in, and that slows down the curing process. So giving it as much airflow as possible is essential to getting it to cure up correctly.
Gotcha. How about fire retardant? Is it fire retardant?
It is. The lime aspect of the hempcrete fully coats the surface of the hemp herd particles and essentially does a calcification or a petrification of it. The material is extremely fireproof. We have a couple of videos we've made of holding a propane torch directly against the wall. The surface will turn black, and then that's about it. It doesn't catch fire. It doesn't smoke. It doesn't have any sort of penetration in there. It makes a very, very good fire-retarding material.
What about bugs, like termites and that kind of thing?
Same thing. It essentially petrifies the hemp, and it makes it appear as stone to the insects, so they're not going to eat it because they don't like eating stone. You don't really have any issues with insects, with mold, with fire. Essentially, you're turning your wall into a very lightweight insulating stone system.
Yeah, I'm thinking with mold, with any type of concrete, with stucco, MP about stucco, or if you're doing a, an application where if you have any type of cement work or even in pavers, that if there's a lot of trees and not that much sun, a lot of air, you're going to get a lot more of that moisture and mildew building up. This is a little bit more impervious to that?
It usually is a little more impervious because the amount of permeability makes it so you don't have any consistent saturation of water in there. We have seen some instances where, because of some timing issues, the contractors haven't necessarily done what they're supposed to do, and they've put up drywall directly on the board while it's still wet. The paper backing of the drywall immediately got some mold on it because it was against a fully saturated material, but the hempcrete itself was not the food source for the mold. So even, like you said, with concrete, you can get mold or mildew growth on there. But if you can control your drying process correctly so that you don't have a long-term saturation of water in there, once the water levels and the moisture levels in the hempcrete even out, you really will never be able to drive the moisture level high enough to have any real risk of mold or mildew growth.
All right. Now, let's say I wanted to hire Kevin, who happens to be a superb contractor in Bucks County here in eastern Pennsylvania. And I did a lot of research on hempcrete, and I wanted him to use hempcrete in my house. Okay. Does he have to get certified, qualified in any way to do that?
We do require training for certification and issuing of a warranty for the contractor. We typically include a day or two of on-site training with your construction crew just to make sure everything is going well. We've also run a couple of workshops, mostly through the Midwest, where we'll have contractors or the head of a contracting group come in and join us on a sample build. The material is pretty straightforward to install, but there are certain minor details that can get missed for the installation. But
like anything else in construction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if Kevin wanted to build with hempcrete, he would call us up. We would figure out what he needs for his project, ship it out to him, and he would schedule a date when he's ready to start casting. We would come out and oversee the first day of casting and go through a classroom session and then hands-on installation guidelines. And once he's certified, he can build as many of these as he wants. We're fine with that.
All right. So the fact that the federal government still outlaws the growing of it, if I wanted to build with it, or I wanted Kevin to put an addition on involving hempcrete, do I run into any problems locally in terms of getting that approved?
Not in terms of the legality of it. You're going to have to go through some permitting work with your local building official. Because hempcrete, the way the building system works with the permeability of the material and the avoidance of building wrap or vapor barriers, you sometimes have to do some work with your building council in order to get them to approve the material system, not necessarily the material itself. But it's not a legal issue. It's more of a coding and permitting issue.
Yeah, because the product itself, you said, is not structural.
It's not structural.
You require a typical stick framing or some other sort of structural framing system that does not include the hempcrete itself.
Right. Okay. All right. But would this be covered by code? It wouldn't be covered by code, right?
No, because you're not dealing with anything structural with the product.
Yeah.
So everything that if I'm building your house and I still do the traditional, if I'm going to be doing stick frame and using this to fill in, it's non-structural. So it's really just an application. You could classify it under, say, a concrete cladding. You can put it under. You can put it under an insulating.
Insulation.
Yeah.
So there's
primarily
a lot of different ways.
It's classified as an insulation system.
Yeah.
All right. If you have this between the sticks in the house and frame, do you need insulation in addition to it? It doesn't sound that way, no.
It would act as the insulation for the walls. You would typically still have insulation in your roof system. You can cast hempcrete into your roof, but the additional weight of it while it's wet means you have to install extra structural support that won't be necessary once it's dried out. So from a practical standpoint, we don't always recommend using it in the roof system.
All right, so it's made to order for walls?
Yes.
Correct.
For walls. Does it add to the rigidity of the structure as well?
It does. We don't have the testing completed in the U.S., but from the U.K. testing that was done, it essentially makes it so all the studs will fail at their rupture strength, not their flexural strength. The rigidity of the hempcrete prevents the studs from bending or bowing, so you can get some extra strength in there. But from a structural standpoint, you're going to get pretty much the same kind of performance as you would from a traditional stick frame build system.
So I'm thinking in my mind also with the product, since we can use it as an insulator, the gases, like usually with certain products, say like a spray foam insulation, you're putting a lot of VOCs into the element that are still going to be there. You're kind of eliminating all that now.
Yeah, there's no emissions for this product. All of the materials are essentially natural building materials. The hemp doesn't have any off-gassing. It actually embodies a significant amount of carbon dioxide into the cell structure of the walls. And the lime itself, during its curing, is essentially absorbing carbon dioxide out of the air and converting itself back into limestone. So from the product itself, there's no VOCs, no off-gassing. It actually absorbs carbon during its curing process.
And it's lighter, in my reading to get ready for this interview, it's lighter than concrete too, right?
It is. It's significantly lighter. The dried cured weight of the material is somewhere around 17 pounds per cubic foot. It's lighter, it's less dense. It's not as strong, but it has better insulation and it has better... essentially better permeability. That's really the defining characteristic of the hempcrete, is the permeability and the insulation of it.
Yeah, maybe this analogy is an incorrect one, but to me, as you're talking here, I'm seeing myself, the hemp fibers sort of perform the same function that rebar is doing concrete, right? Is that true or false?
The hemp fibers are typically a small portion of the hemp mix that is used in the actual casting of it. The majority of it is hemp herd, which is the wood core, whereas the fibers are the bark. Usually you have a little bit of fiber in the hemp you're using just because it's very difficult to fully separate the materials. And a small amount of fiber, maybe up to 5 to 10% content, will add some essentially reinforcement to the material. Hemp is a somewhat unique agricultural product in that it actually contains silica at a cellular level. And the silica in the cells of the hemp, both the herd and the fiber, basically make an anchor point that lets cementitious materials like limes or cements or typically concretes bond directly to them and grow crystals off them. So hemp fiber can be used as a structural reinforcing fiber for concrete, for stuccos, for a variety of masonry materials, and actually was originally used as a popular reinforcing fiber back in the 1920s and 30s as a substitute for animal hair fiber in historic plastering and concrete.
Yeah, like the horse hair.
Horse hair. We just interviewed an architect not too long ago who was tearing apart an old house, reconstructing an old house, and I think he found horse hair in the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the chimney. Yeah.
That's what I had in my old house was horse hair. It was a stone-filled stone. So the house that I had purchased in Plumsteadville was the same basic application. It was the timbers, but what they used was the natural element of stone, whatever was in there, and used horse hairs to bond the cement together. Mm-hmm. And that house was built in 1774.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was the same application, but this is just a more advanced product because you're eliminating a lot of the moisture. You're actually dealing with a better insulation. There's no off-gassing today because a lot of the products today that are really – doing super well, but they're off-gassing, which I'm not a big fan of, but sometimes you got to look at it and go, well, I guess we got to deal with it because there's not much else out there. This hempcrete, actually, it's given a lot of good bonuses that you can get with the moisture, VOCs, insulation. It's kind of a win-win situation. So if you take that money for the cost, it'd be more of spending up front. It'd probably pay itself off pretty
quickly. It is more expensive up front. The original house in North Carolina that was built, it had an estimated square footage cost of about $133 per square foot in 2010. If you adjust that to the equivalent money in 2018, that's closer to about $150 a square foot. Average square foot building costs in the U.S. right now are around $125 per square foot. But the 2010 house was using the fully imported building system. So you have the extra transportation cost.
So
and
I would imagine.
We've been able to bring that down a bit. And from our most recent estimates, you're looking at a total project cost increase of somewhere in the 4 to 8% range, depending on your design details.
Which is nothing.
Yeah, it's really nothing on the whole cost of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you're probably going to make it back in terms of utility costs pretty quickly.
It was 2010 to 2000 now, utility costs, gas, It's more expensive today. Electric, it's a lot
I think
more
your
expensive.
Next edition is going to be built with hemp.
I think I'm going to be doing hemp. So, well, I just like the fact that dealing with – we have a friend of ours at the show of Your Valuable Home, Caroline Blazowski. She's the owner of My Healthy
Home
Expert.
Yeah, she would love this.
And she – I'm thinking in my mind the whole time doing this. She would love this because of those off gases that she's so much against like I am. This is a better product.
Yeah, VOCs.
Yeah, the VOCs.
VOCs, yeah. Yeah, this is a much better product. Well, this has been fascinating, Ty. And if somebody out there right now listening was, you know, I've got to build a house with hemp, right? Hempcrete.
Yes.
How do they, what's step one? Do they call you?
Yeah, step one is to call us at American Lime Technology. The first thing we really want to do is talk to them about what they're trying to do and make sure that hempcrete is actually the right option for that.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, it is, but occasionally we get projects where it's really not quite the right building material for what they're trying to do. Most residential projects are fine, but occasionally we get sort of odd ones. We had a guy wanting to build a sauna out of hempcrete, and that was one where we had to say no because hempcrete is such a stabilizing insulator that it would take an enormous amount of heat to actually heat up the inside of that sauna because the walls would keep sucking all the heat out of the room. And then once it was hot, it would take days for it to cool down. So you can't really have the level of temperature control you need there. Other types of projects where it's just not quite the right material, we want to make sure that, one, that you're going to be getting what you want, and two, that hempcrete is the best option. Hempcrete is a very, very good option in most cases, and we want to work as much as we can with folks on it. So we want to discuss the project to make sure that people understand what it takes to build with hempcrete. From that point, we would ideally want to see a basic design sketch, some sense of what you're trying to build, some dimensions, some basic site plans if you have them. From there, we'll run an estimate, figure out what it would cost to actually build with hempcrete, and if it works for your budget, we'll get hempcrete material blended up and ready to ship out to you as soon as you're far enough along in terms of your foundation and framing. And then schedule a site visit to train your construction crew on how to put it into the wall.
All right, we're short on time, but I want to do two things yet. Establish the fact that marijuana and industrial hemp are not the same thing, correct? The way
correct.
I understand it.
Yeah.
Totally
industrial
not the same
hemp
thing.
Has been bred to the point that it has a negligible amount of THC, which is the drug ingredient of marijuana in it.
Mm-hmm.
It has typically less than 0.01% THC, which is just basically nothing. And on the flip side, THC in the marijuana plant actually makes the fibers in the herds unsuitable for industrial purposes. They're bred for entirely different uses, and they don't really cross over. If they were to crossbreed, it would make it so neither one is useful for anything.
So they're almost not in the same family.
Same family, but basically distant cousins.
Distant cousins.
Very different professions.
The city cousin and the country cousin.
Exactly.
So before we lose you, tell our listeners how to get in touch with you. What's your website? How they can call you, for instance?
Sure. Our website is AmericanLimeTechnology.com, and you can reach us at 773-286-2100. Look at our website, see if you have any questions, if you like any of our products. Be sure to reach out to us, and we'll see if we can get a project going with you.
Ty Perfect. Olson, thank you very, very much. This has been very educational, very informative.
And different.
And definitely different. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right,
Ty.
Thank you very much for coming.
Take care.
Your valuable home.
Take care.
All right, talk soon.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. Check out TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Werung's Lumber and Home Center. That's WERUNGS.com.
Are your windows letting air in? Get new windows before winter comes. Tom Adams Windows and Carpets was awarded Best Installation in the Nation by Window and Door Magazine. We're celebrating this with 50% off our award-winning installation on selected energy-saving windows. Call us or visit us online at TomAdamsWindows.com for no deposit, no money down financing. We also provide free in-home estimates. Again, TomAdamsWindows.com. Hurry, sale ends October 14.
We're back, and you're listening to Your Valuable Home with me, Contractor Kevin Kennedy. Don't be shy. Send us your questions about home improvements. If I can't answer them, I'm going to find somebody that can. Submit your questions to kevin@yourvaluablehome.net or call me at 215-364-3286.
Thanks for joining us on Your Valuable Home. I'm contractor Kevin Kennedy.
And I'm Ron Melk. We're right here at 2 p.m. every Saturday on WWDB Talk 860. Your Valuable Home is brought to you by Tom Adams with locations throughout Bucks and Montgomery counties in the Lehigh Valley and Waring's Lumber and Home Center on Route 611 just north of Doylestown. Check them out at TomAdamsWindowsAndCarpets.com and Waring's, that's W-E-H-R-U-N-G-S.com.